down there, but I won't be able to see what's...
Switch on the side of your...
I have to turn around and look this way all the time, so... it's good to be here. Looking around and... Oh, the speaker? Oh, I always usually don't do that. Okay. Mary couldn't come, and I'll say that later when we have our other services. She wanted to. She always enjoys what I do now.
I don't think you have your switch still.
Oh, yeah. It sure is.
Am I not talking loud enough?
Maybe it's too low. Maybe it's too low.
Yeah. John, raise it just a hair on the tie.
We'll get it.
Can you hear me? When you can't hear me, raise your hand. And as I get older and I get up to start talking, and we got older people in the audience now there at Dallas, and so I see this. So you forget to raise your voice and say what you need to. Anyway, Mary couldn't come because they're having a potluck in Dallas today, New Year's potluck and so forth. And so if she'd have come down, and we'd had to go back home and get the food, they wanted to start it right after services. So she decided to stay. It was better for her to do that and get her food ready. So sorry she couldn't come. She always enjoys coming here, and especially you ladies that once a year she always got together there at Grand Pass and watched a lot of theater, came home and told me a whole bunch of stuff. Anyway, she had a good time. But it's good to be here. Good to see everybody here. As to what I was going to do this today, we had a memorial service yesterday at Dallas. I don't know whether anybody knows Barbara Leonard. I guess not. She passed away. She's 81. And people had a lot of sadness with regard to that and so forth. But another thing, we also just got through studying the Synoptic Gospels. And I'll just read a couple of passages in the book of Luke after we finished studying the Synoptic Gospels, came to the end where Jesus raised from the dead. And there are four, five, six places where it talks about when Jesus raised from the dead. And those that got to see him after he raised from the dead talked about their being joyful, their being glad, and so forth. And when you think about that for a moment, Jesus died and nobody really realized that he was going to raise from the dead. Even though he had spoken that, said it, they didn't know he was going to be killed, that he was going to die. Though he said that repeatedly, it just didn't ring a bell for them. So once he died and they thought, you know, it was all over, they wouldn't see it anymore. But just part of one day, and then all day Saturday and the early Sunday morning, he raises from the dead. And then he starts coming out and seeing people. And you can just imagine, if you'd have been one of those people, how thrilled you'd have been, how joyful you'd have been. When you plug that in and just think back sometime and think about it, it's just fantastic. In Luke 24, when second time Jesus came and he was with all the apostles, and he came in and said, "See my hands, see my feet," and so forth. And of course, Thomas was not there the first time, and that's what he said, I won't believe until I see that. And so he came back again and he showed them that. In verse 41 it says, "And while they still disbelieved for joy and wondered, he said to them, 'Have ye anything to eat?' And then he went ahead and ate." They had all the evidence they needed. He's raised from the dead. But it says they still disbelieved for joy. Well, they knew he raised from the dead, but they just so much joy. It was hard to believe that he was. Then the very last verse there in that same chapter says that they worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy and were continually in the temple blessing God. So after he ascended to the heavens and they saw that and witnessed that, then they came back to Jerusalem. On the way, they were just filled with joy. And when we finished that study of the Synoptic Gospels, and we're emphasizing this, the joy they had, I thought of the book of Zephaniah. That very seldom do we, the Old Testament book of Zephaniah, very seldom do we study. It's just three short chapters. But I thought of the one thing, just the short book, and wonder in these minor prophets and the major prophets, what are the things that you remember about them? So something has to stand out when you, let's see, Hosea, Amos, what was they about? What was Zephaniah about? The thing that stands out about Zephaniah, it's a book, one of the hottest books in the Bible in terms of judgment. Judgment was going to come upon a lot of nations, because of the fact that Assyria is still in power, but Babylon is on the rise, and Babylon is going to bring down Assyria, and when it does, it's going to bring down all the other nations as well that around Palestine, as well as Assyria. So this book of Zephaniah emphasizes that. Judgment is going to come. The judgment is going to come because of the sinfulness of the nations. Not only all the other nations around Israel, but Israel itself. It is going to face judgment because Babylon will be the one that will ultimately take them into captivity. Three times they come, and the first time they come, they take some people captive. Second time they come, they take people captive. And the last time, in 586 when they come, they destroy the temple and Jerusalem, and it's all over for them, for at least by that time, it's been a year, but the fullness of it from the first time they brought anybody was 70 years. And so it was a very distressing time. And the prophets that spoke about this knew about that ahead of time. It was distressing to them. Habakkuk preached at the same time and declared his message, and that's what he was saying. Habakkuk was saying, Lord, do you see all the sin in Israel? Do you see all the sin here in Judah? Why haven't you done anything? And so the Lord responds to him and tells him that what's going to happen, he will be responding. It's been a while, but he will be now be responding. And Babylon is going to take them into captivity. And that just blew Habakkuk's mind. What? They are far worse than we are. How can you? Well, that's the kind of nation that will come, and they will destroy nations. That nation I'm going to use to take you into captivity for 70 years. And then finally, as Habakkuk realized that, he came to understand the purpose of God doing that. And it was to save people of faith and to bring that back. And so Zephaniah is preaching at the same time, and he speaks about that. And so what I want to do is, it speaks about two gatherings in the book of Zephaniah. He talks about joy everywhere. And I'm just going to skip this first passage that we have up there, Zephaniah 3, because we're going to come to that to the end. But in Zephaniah chapter 1, there you have in verse 14, I'm going to start reading there. It says, the great day of Jehovah. By the way, this is about 626. I didn't put that in there. It's the time of Josiah. And in 2 Kings 22, 23, the king Josiah, when he became king, he was one of the best kings that there was in Israel. Everything had been terrible prior to that. There had been some good kings like Hezekiah and so forth. But when Josiah came in, he turned everything around because Manasseh had been the one that was such a terrible king that he brought Israel, he brought Judah back into all of the sinfulness and even worse than had existed before. He did some changing when he was taken over in Babylon. Then he came back and he prayed to God, and he did come back and he did make some reform and some changes, but he didn't change the people at all. And then when Manasseh's son came in, Amon, he went right back to the same thing. And then Josiah came in, his son. And you think he just continued the evilness. But he came in when he was 8 years old to begin to be king because Amon died. And then when he was 16, so 8 years later, when he was 16, he turned to the Lord. When he was 20 years old, he began to say, you know, we need to do some reforming in Judah here. And then he started that, and by the time he was 26, it reached its height, that reform. And he brought everything back, destroyed all the idols, all the false temples that were there, all the false altars and everything else, and eradicated sinfulness out of the nation, and just brought it all back. That's what he did. But as soon as he died, and he went out and fought a battle against the Egyptians, and that's when he was killed. And when he died, and then his sons took over, they took it right back to the evilness that was there before. But God had said before that because of the sins of Manasseh, even after what Josiah did, he said previously that God knew it would not change Judah. It would not change the Jews. And so as soon as Manasseh came back, it did, and went back in there. And God said, because of the sins of Manasseh, this nation is going to come down. And so in Zephaniah 1, strong language, judgment language, verse 14, he says, the great day of Jehovah is near, it is near and haste greatly. Even the voice of the day of Jehovah, The mighty man cries there bitterly. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, a day of trumpet and alarm against the fortified cities and against the high battlements. So very strong language, talking about terrible judgment that's going to come. And I will bring distress upon men, but they shall walk like blind men, because they have sinned against Jehovah, and their blood shall be poured out as dust, and their flesh as dung. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day that Jehovah's wrath, of Jehovah's wrath, by the fire of his jealousy. For he will make an end, yea, a terrible end, of all them that dwell in the land. I want to make just a quick comment on that. There are people who say, how could God do this? Just like when the flood came and Noah, how could God destroy all those people? You say he's a loving God, he's a righteous God, he did all, how come he did that? But the fact is, all the way through the scripture and all the way through the history of mankind, if God had not brought judgment upon nations, upon those that were very sinful, there would not have been any righteous people left. When Noah got on the ark, he took him and his family. There was 8 people out of all the people of the world at that time. What if God had not brought the flood? There'd not even been 8 people later, and they would all have been wiped out. So God has always brought judgment to save those who are righteous, to save those who are trying to follow God and do the right thing. In our nation today, it just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse as we listen to the news. And I know on the news they tell you all the bad things and very few good things. But it is getting worse, and all the sinfulness is coming. And morality is just being thrown out the door. And parents are not even allowed to teach their children the morality anymore. So it's getting worse and worse. Why? Because people turn away from God, and when they turn away from God, they want to shut God out of their lives, and they want to shut him out of the lives of everybody else. And if God ultimately doesn't come in judgment, then the righteous are destroyed. And that is not ever going to happen. So, judgment is spoken about, and that's the reason for it. God is going to save his people. Even those that are still not what they should be, they're going to go into captivity. And after 70 years of captivity, they're going to come back, and they're going to have, during that time, they're going to have changed. They're going to drop back and go back into sinfulness. But they come back, and they want to serve the Lord. And so that's why God is doing this. But chapter 2, verse 1, gather yourselves together, yea, gather together, O nation that has no shame, before the decree bring forth, before the day pass as the chaff, before the fierce anger of Jehovah come upon you, before the day of Jehovah's anger come upon you. He tells them, even though he's going to do this, he pleads with them, seek ye Jehovah, all ye meek of the earth that have kept his ordinances. Seek his righteousness. Seek meekness. It may be well that you will be hid in the day of Jehovah's anger. And I think there he's probably talking about those who have enough righteousness that will seek Jehovah, that God has the Babylonian king come in and take people captive. He doesn't destroy them. He just takes them off into captivity and gives them a place where they're all going to dwell, and they can dwell together, and they are not destroyed. And so God said, it may be that in his day that it will be well with you. So for them it was actually well, because they went off together with their people. And then the second group. But the third time Nebuchadnezzar came, everybody was destroyed. Now from there, as he says, gather yourselves together. That's a gathering, gather for judgment. It's a gathering where there's going to be terrible distress, agony, everywhere, even before it comes, anticipating what's going to happen. Just a terrible experience when you're talking about things like that. But then, at the end of the book, in chapter 3, he's going to talk about another gathering. And it's going to be a gathering of joy. And so that's what we ultimately want to emphasize here. So when we talk about this period of time, we will speak about something in the sermon that will relate to this, and particularly this time, because during the time of Josiah, you remember that as he began his reform, He's been in shape and into the temple to check out, see if the money in the temple is going to be given to those who are going again, who are going to go in and cleanse the temple and bring it back like it should be and so forth. And when they went in and they looked around for that, and they came back and said, yes, all that money has been given to the people and they're using it properly and everything is being restored. But, and you all remember that, don't you? There's something else that we found. What we found was a copy of the Book of Jehovah. Now, it wasn't this full Bible, but it was the Law of Moses. And they found a copy of it hidden. Nobody even knew it was there. Here is Josiah, the king. He doesn't have a copy of it himself. And in Deuteronomy 17, what God told the king when you become king is what you need to do when you have a king is you need to go and get a copy. So there's a copy in the temple. You need to get a copy and make a copy of that and have it for yourself. And every day read that law. Read from it. That's what will keep you on target and keep this nation on target. But here during the time of Josiah, how long had this been? They didn't even know it was there. The priests didn't even know it was there. And they're the ones that are supposed to be teaching the people. So the people weren't being taught righteousness. They weren't being taught morality and what's right. They weren't being taught against idolatry and about God. It was just out of the picture. No wonder they were such an evil nation. And so this was the time that all that happened. And that's why the judgment that's on all the other nations is also going to come upon Jude as well. The rest of chapter 2, it just goes ahead and talks about, he starts talking about different nations. All the minor or major prophets do that. Isaiah, from Isaiah chapter 13 to 24, talks about a number of nations, lengthy discussions with regard to the judgments that are going to come upon them. Here, Zephaniah does that very briefly, but very strongly. He talks about there in verse 4, Gaza and the other cities, that was the Philistines. In chapter 8, he talks about Moab is going to be destroyed. He talks about Ammon is going to be destroyed there in verse 9, middle of it. He talks about the Ethiopians in verse 12. He talks about the Assyrians in verse 13. And so desolation is going to come upon everybody, he says. And so as we look at that, that's what's going to be coming to take place. All right. There you go. Just pointed there. So what I want to do is just briefly talk about, in fact, need to look. When we are supposed to be through, by the way?
20 after.
20 after? Okay.
We have a bell at a quarter after and then 20.
Okay. All right. All right. So I want to talk about some things that mention that what brings distress upon nations, that brings judgment ultimately upon them. And the first one, and we're looking at this in chapter 3, and that's what we're going to be emphasizing the rest of the time. And I don't know how often you all have been able to study Zephaniah and so forth, but every once in a while you need to go back and ring the bell, as it were, and remind yourself of some of the things that were taught. But I think this is interesting from the standpoint of our culture that we live in today. Why is it getting the way it is? Well, Zephaniah mentions a number of things here as to what brings judgment. Why bad things come upon nations and why that is going to ultimately take place. And the first one he mentions is chapter 3, verse 1. Woe unto her that is rebellious and polluted, to the oppressing city. She obeyed not the voice, she received not correction. So the first thing he says there is she received not correction. And that's the fact that that's what was going on with Judah. The fact that they had lost, they didn't even know where the law of Moses was. They lost correction. Nobody was correcting the wrong things that were going on. And when you don't correct the wrong things that are going on, it happens like what we're seeing a lot in our country. When it's not being corrected properly, then what's going to happen is it's going to just continue to get worse and worse and worse. And that's what we have today. I mean, when I went to school, when I was in the 10th grade, biology teacher, you know, got up and we were going to study biology. But before we did that, we got to go back and talk about the beginning of things. So we go back, you know, 50 billion years or 5 million years, and he would be talking about that and talk about evolution. And after he did all that, then he gave us a test. Well, I, and not only I, but other people as well, when we answered those questions that he was asking about how everything came about, I would say, well, here's what evolution says, but, and I would just fill in a little paragraph here, it's what I thought about it. And then on down all the way through. When he got up, he corrected all those tests and he passed them back to us. I didn't get a terrible grade because I answered the other ones, but I said, here's what I think. But he got up and said, you know what? He was a tall guy. You kids, I just want you to know, just answer the questions I'm asking. Don't tell me what you think. Don't tell me what you believe. I raised my hand. And I said, you're telling us what you believe, what you think, and as far as I know, there's no scientific evidence. The people say it, they bring it up, and they want us to believe that, but there's no evidence for it. So if you want to tell me what you believe, and now you're telling me I can't tell you what I believe. And that's what's going on. Out into the universities. Everybody goes to university. You can't talk about your faith and talk about God and creation and all that sort of thing. They don't want anything like that. They want to shut it out. That's what happens to nations. If we're having bad things going on, that's what they're doing. Shutting it down. All the way your parents talk to you about God created. Yeah. They have it there. Yeah, sure. And they go on like that and it kind of, oh, a kid that says, yeah. And here you are thinking and you believe that God did. You believe in Genesis 1. And actually you think that evidences are there, but you're kind of intimidated by that. And a lot of times those kids that believe those things, by the time they get out of the university, they don't think they believe in God anymore. Why? Because correction is being shut out of their life. They don't want that to be in there. Well, secondly, he goes on in the same verse. He says, they received not correction. She trusted not in Jehovah and drew not near to her God. And of course, that's another thing that's going to take place. You don't draw near to God. And that's why they didn't draw near to God. And so they were Judah. And all the way through and gone back into idolatry. They came out of Egypt and they started worshiping God. But when they got all the cities, they didn't have to build. And all the vineyards out there, they didn't have to plant there. They got all that, got all wrapped up in that and kind of forgot all about God that provided for all that. And started building altars to the gods that they served in Egypt. Come on! They had nothing to do with what you, but they got wrapped up in that. And today people are wrapped up in materialism and sports and on it goes. How many things that are there and they just forget all about God. They don't draw near to God. In fact, there's a passage in chapter 1 and verse 12. Zephaniah is talking a little similar to what Jeremiah said. He says, by the way, Jeremiah was preaching at the same time we're teaching. He said, and it shall come to pass at that time that I will approach Jerusalem with lamps. So he's going to check out and check everybody. Nobody's going to hide from God. And I will punish the men that are set along their leaves, that say in their heart, Jehovah will not do good, neither will he do evil. Jehovah's not going to respond. We can do whatever we want to. And that's the kind of attitude they have. And so, go ahead and say there in chapter 3:3-4, he talks about the princes, the judges, the prophets, the priests, and the people. Everybody was of that same category. In Hosea 4 and verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And no wonder. The priests certainly were not teaching them, and they were the ones that were supposed to do it. And so like priests, like prophets, like people, everybody was the same because they just turned away from God and didn't want to draw near to Him at all. And then further, they resisted instruction. In verse 5, it says, Jehovah in the midst of her is righteous, and he will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his justice to light. He fails not. And I'm going to add to that down in verse 7. I said, only fear thou me, receive correction, and so forth. Now, what he says here is they resisted instruction. And that's when we're looking at the PowerPoint there. 2 Kings 22, they didn't even have the law of God anywhere. That's resisting instruction. They just put it away. Now, somebody may have hid that just because somebody will want to destroy that, and so they put it and hid it away for that. But still, nobody was being instructed by it. But for whatever reason, it was over there. The instruction was not going on. And it was there, it says, every day. Well, wait a minute. They took the law and they put it in the temple and they hid it. Nobody even knew it was there. The priests weren't yet. What do you mean? God was instructing them every day. That's where the prophets come in, right? The prophets, he said, and we have number of passages there, they were sent out early every morning. They hated the true prophets. They loved the false prophets. But God had, he knew they'd tossed that book back and nobody was bringing that out. But what God did says, you're still going to hear from me. And he sent those prophets every morning early and prophesied them unto them repeatedly over and over and over again. And so they were people who resisted instruction. They hated those prophets. So it's not that. It's like, I guess we consider all the nations, we think, well, Israel's pretty special. It had the law of Moses. So they got all that instruction. But hey, what about Assyria? They didn't have the law of Moses. They didn't have the book of the law of God and so forth. So they didn't know anything. Now, one thing for sure, and I think it's very true in this world today, there's nowhere, no time, that any nation never got instruction from God, never got information from God. Remember Jonah? God sent Jonah over to Nineveh. Was that the only time God ever did something like that? That's a record we have, but it tells us something. God did that kind of thing. I remember Abraham when they were going to take his wife. He didn't tell him, she's my sister, so they were going to take him. But God spoke to the king and told him, that is not your wife, and she is Abraham's wife. And he immediately said, Abraham, you didn't tell me that. If you'd have told me that, I wouldn't have done this. They knew that it was wrong to take somebody else's wife. Where did they learn that? It was all over the place. God had instructed all nations. And so people got to say, you know, I just don't. God has given the correction. He's given the instruction if people will listen to it. And what I'm hearing in our America today, that's just the country I live in, the people are not listening to it. They don't want to hear it. They're passing laws against what we would say is the right thing to do. And other people are trying to get petitions and maybe try to pass some legislation that will somehow keep us from killing our babies before they're born. And all the legislation and all those petitions, that's great. Be involved in that. And tell you what, unless people are being taught the Word, if they're rejecting that, it will never change. People have got to come back and say, what is the right moral thing to do? And if they get on that level and begin to deal with it that way, then they will. And so, anyway, we'll be talking about Deuteronomy 6 later on. That's on the chart there. And so, what they were now to experience, he said, you didn't want to receive correction for what's going to happen is the day is going to come in Amos 8 verse 7, there's going to be a famine. I'm not talking this time about a famine of the, you know, of what you plant out there, the vineyards and all that sort of thing. There's going to be a famine of the Word. You're going to be sent out. Now, when they were taken into captivity, those that were taken into captivity, only God sent a prophet and began to help those people. But when the people were taken out, one group and then another group, God just ceased. And you're not going to hear anything more from me, because the next thing that's going to come is judgment. So we need to keep that message out all the time, because if we don't, the judgment will come. Then they rose early and corrupted themselves. In verse 7, after he says, "They only through thou me receive correction, so her dwelling shall not be cut off, according to all that I have appointed concerning her. But they rose early and corrupted all their doings." So everything they did, they corrupted all their doings. Micah chapter 2 and verse 1, Micah spoke about, I get older, I can't remember how verses start. Woe to them that devise iniquity upon their bed. Woe unto them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their bed. When the morning is light, then he says, they practice it because it is in the power of their hands. So all during the night, what are they doing? They're thinking about the wickedness, the evilness that they're going to work tomorrow. That's what goes on. I think sometimes when I hear, you know, the political realm today, and I'm not trying to get into, you know, a great deal of politics, but I tell you what everybody's doing, I know what they're doing before they get into legislative assemblies and they try to get something going on that's bad. They've been thinking about it all night long and trying to figure out how they're going to work this out. That's the way Israel itself had become. All the nations, other nations had, and they had become like her. And so we go on and we want to look at some characteristics of the blessed. Come down to verse 9. I've got to get back. Yeah, verse 9. I'll pick up in verse 8. Therefore wait ye for me, says Jehovah, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. So there it is, that he talks about the judgment. But then he turns, he says, for then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Jehovah to serve him with one consent. From beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my suppliants, even the daughters of my dispersed, shall bring mine offering. In that day shalt thou not be put to shame for all thy doings wherein thou hast transgressed against me. For then I will take away out of the midst of thee thy proudly exalting ones. I'll take about those people are just full of pride, no humility at all. And thou shalt no more be haughty in my holy mountain. But I will leave in the midst of thee an afflicted and poor people, and they shall take refuge in the name of Jehovah. The remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity, nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth. For they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. I'm going to continue to read, but as I'm reading, I just want to point out that he moves on, and I think he's talking about Israel is going to go within 70 years of captivity. And they were going to learn and receive correction and change their ways, their thoughts, and so when they came back, they were going to function like a righteous people. But all of us know that in time, that lasted only for a period of time, they started going back in their sins. But we know that when Jesus came, so when he's talking about these things and what he's going to do for his righteous people, it not only talks about that, I think ultimately what's emphasized here is our time. When Jesus came and when the kingdom of God was established, when the church is now in existence, these are the qualifying characteristics of those people that I'm going to make possible for them. And he goes on in verse 14, at that time when those kind of characteristics are there, he says, single daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel, be glad, and rejoice with all the heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. Jehovah has taken away thy judgments. He has cast out thine enemy. The king of Israel, even Jehovah, is in the midst of thee. Thou shalt not fear evil any more. I talked about them as they came out of captivity. It's talking about us today. Reflect this upon us, all of this. Verse 16, in that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, fear thou not, O Zion, let not thy heart be slack. Jehovah thy God is in the midst of thee, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing. Then notice verse 18. This is what stands out to me about Zephaniah. I'm going to gather people for judgment. But then he says, as he talked about, but when I bring them back and they have these righteous characteristics and I will be with them, they will have joy and I will have joy. He says, I will gather them, that sorrow, for the solemn assembly. Down in verse 19, the middle of it. And gather that which was driven away. Down in verse 20, we'll come back to you later. And I will gather you. So Zephaniah talks about God gathers people to judgment because of the terrible sins that they're guilty of, the consequences of it. But then he says, but what my heart is all about, why I do it, my purpose is to turn people around, get them back on the righteous path, and gather them together. And we notice, as we're looking at this, notice the characteristics of those kind of people that are going to be blessed, that God will bring. And I have here God's holy mountain, and that's used throughout the prophets. I got Isaiah 2, that's one of the ones that really stand out. In the latter days, upon the mountain, top of the mountain, Jehovah, I will establish my kingdom, and so forth. So he talks about the day is going to come. He's talking about the church, the kingdom. That comes about in Acts chapter 2, when the gospel was first proclaimed. And so when Mount Zion, the holy mountain, is mentioned, yes, it's talking about Jerusalem, but the holy mountain, the one that's really going to be the holy mountain, will be the church. So these are characteristics that this is about us. What we are to be like today, each and every one of us. And I, you people are here all the time, you hear the word taught, you know it. And so these are not unfamiliar things, but they're things that we want to keep on emphasizing and emphasize. It brings us joy. He says they'll have a purity of language, pure language. And I don't have time to go through all this, but there's a bunch of passages of scripture that I have that talks about Peter did so much about you turn away from the evil various sins. He'll list a long line of sins that you used to be guilty of, and these are the things you're going to come back to. But it starts with a pure language. Today we're hearing worse and worse language all the time. When you start hearing people and you listen to them talk all the time, and all you ever hear from them is pure, helpful, invigorating, encouraging language. That pure language, they are good people. They're righteous people. So that's the first thing that we read there, mentioned in verse 9. Then unity. They will serve him with one consent. So anytime, brethren in the church, when we begin to get divided, we start to argue with each other and get aggravated and won't forgive each other, won't even talk to each other to try to work things out, we're not a part of that gathering that God is gathering together, truly. And it's going to have joy. So God's people are people that are united people. They work with one consent. They help each other. And every one of us help each other to get the work done that we can all do together. Not only that, but then the unity, they serve Him with one consent. And they're humble. Remember God's people? Even the Jews, when Jesus was, when we studied through the Gospels. Oh, did the Pharisees and the Sadducees, were they involved in religious things and ceremony and all that? Yeah, but they were proud of themselves. Look at what we're doing. They wanted everybody to see if they were going to put some money in the pot. You know, wait till everybody's looking and then I put it in there. And everything they did, phylacteries, you know, put it between, they didn't even do what those things that they had a little passage of scripture or tied around their robe. They didn't even practice those things. They just did it for a show. So today, we come and we worship God. Do it with humility. We know that we need God's forgiveness. We know that we're not going to run around pride and say, look at me. Look how good I am. Look how righteous I am. It's not about any of that. All we're doing is humbly serving our God that makes it all possible. And then afflicted and the poor people. Thank God for your forgiveness that you have done for us. In Matthew the 5th chapter, when Jesus begins the Sermon on the Mount, talking about that kind of thing. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy, and so forth. God is the one that helps us. And so we're a poor, we're an afflicted people. God is the one that enables us then to function in the mighty way that we're able to do so. And then all the righteous activity. There when he said down in verse... what do I have on that? Verse 13 through 16. Verse 13, trying to find it, where they shall not make him afraid. Can anybody find that? Can't even find it here. Oh, my hand shall, verse 16, the end of verse 16. Fear not, O Zion, let not thy hands be slack. He talked to them about being diligent, and he backed it up by saying, let not your hearts be slack. How's our life? Every day with regard to serving God and making sure we're always on the right track, making sure we're getting that word into our mind and making sure we get, and we'll be talking about that on our sermon, that word in our children's mind and so forth. And what we do at church, all the things that need to be done, to do the best work that we can, have the best influence we can, let not your hand be slack. And we know that every time people get together, man, everybody's rolling up their sleeves, and they're going to go at it, and they get sweaty, and they're tired, but boy, they're going to keep going because this job is not done yet. That's the people that God wants to be serving Him. And so these are characteristics of us today that God wants to see in us. And then we come to this last part. And we got 5 minutes or so I'm just going to put it all up here and talk about this. When he talks about the joy in verse 14, sing, and you'll see there, be glad, still in verse 14. Down in verse 17, Jehovah thy God is in the midst of thee, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. Now what I thought about is when we think about Jesus, and they saw Jesus raised from the dead, gladness, joy, just overflowing. I mean, you can't explain your joy. And we sometimes run into that kind of thing in life. But we all know this, that the things that we're able to joy because of what God has done for us, He's forgiven us, we're His children. The lady that passed away here a week or so ago, the one thing that stood in her mind constantly as she was in terrible pain, but the day is going to come that I will be with God. Her husband, it's just hard for him to know that she's going to be gone, but she will not have to suffer this pain anymore, and the joy she's got. And here he was, tears in his eyes, and then all of a sudden a big smile comes on his face. That's the kind of joy. And Peter talked about that we're full of a joy, rejoicing with joy that's unexplainable, he said, because of the salvation we have. Every day of our lives, I don't care what's going on, fear, yeah, anxiety, yeah, but get that and kind of get it under your feet and stomp it down. Because start thinking about the joy. That's what makes us able to be the kind of people we are, is let that joy fill ourselves up. And he goes ahead and not only talks about our joy, but God's joy. What is God? When God brings his people back and he forgives them of their sins, but they repent, well, I know we think of it in humans, he just grabs us around and hugs us, and he is full of joy. When we go to heaven one of these days, and we think, boy, I'm going to enter in, and there I am, there's the throne of God and everything around the throne of God. Oh, what joy I'm going to have. Skip over to who's on the throne. God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit. What kind of joy is God going to have? I'm very seldom thought as much about that. But it's only when I go in the prophets, I read that again. I read that. And I see statements like that. And I think, you know, God is going to be full of joy. So when the day comes and we leave this life, when these days when I leave this life, I can be filled with joy. At that time, right now I can be filled with joy. But it's not going to stop there. When we talk about the exuberant joy that we're all going to have, when we enter that heavenly, when we see Jesus coming on the clouds with all his angels and all the saved ones, people that have died and we know they're friends and they're righteous people and they're all coming back, there's no way, there is no way to explain the kind of joy that's just going to burst us out. No wonder we got to be raised from the dead with a new body, because that kind of emotion, that powerful emotion, this body would just die off. It couldn't hack it. So that's what's coming, and that's what we need to keep in our minds very clearly. So that's our lesson. And those are things that even though Zephaniah is a hot book, it's also a very wonderful book, because he helps us focus on that wonderful thing, what God has done for us. Thank you for your attention.